Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn the page and talk about Pauline Christianity. But before I do, I want to welcome Kirk to the program. And I know, Kirk, you want to talk about similarities between the Islamic scriptures and the Christian New Testament. But what do you think about the advertisement to save Christmas and to put Christ back in?
Yeah.
Why don't we just put Talmos back in? He was the one that started it.
Right. You know, why not do what would be historically more accurate and put Dionysus back in?
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's no question that Roman Christianity grew up as a result of the affinity that Romans had for the Greek son of the sun, Dionysus. In fact, virtually every aspect of Dionysus, including Christmas, is played out in the Dionysus story. There is the Easter time festival of Dionysus, and of course the Yuletide festival of Dionysus. Why not just put Dionysus back into Christmas?
Yeah, if you're going to tell the truth, tell the whole truth.
Right.
And the Christmas tree.
Now, by the way, I don't have a problem of putting Christ back into Christmas, because there was no Christ.
You know,
there was no Christ. There isn't even a Christos written anywhere in the first, second, and third century Greek manuscripts in the so-called Christian New Testament. There, you know, the historical evidence from the Romans is conclusive, and that is that Christos wasn't even the term that was being represented by the placeholders that exist in 100% of the pre-Constantine manuscripts, which tell us to, just as in the Septuagint, saying this is a Hebrew name or a Hebrew title. You need to look at the Hebrew text, because we don't have the letters in the Greek alphabet to write it out. So go look at the Hebrew if you want to understand. Now, in the case of the Greek text, what we know from the Roman contemporaneous writings is that they weren't even based on Christos, and therefore Christ. They were based on Christus, an entirely different word, spelled with different letters. And Christus doesn't mean to apply drugs, which is what Christos does. And so if you're a Christian, you are drugged.
Right.
Now, the Christus means useful servant.
Right, which would be a good application.
Right, an implement capable of doing quality work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a, you know, minus the Yahweh aspect of Masaya. The Masay is from Masay, which means the work of, the implement doing the work of. So at least Christus would be a reasonable translation of the Hebrew title. But since it's a Hebrew title, you would never transliterate Christus, because it's a Greek translation of the Hebrew title. If you're going to translate it, translate the Hebrew title itself, which would be the work of Yahweh. Or Masayah, if you're going to transliterate it. But so there was no Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and make no mistake, this Christian didn't say, I want to put the Christ and using it as a title back into it. No, he's using Christ as a name.
Yes.
And there was no one named Christ.
No, never.
If this religious buffoon is willing to lie to Christians and make a movie about putting Christ back in Christmas, when Christmas is a purely pagan holiday, having nothing to do with God. In fact, doesn't God talk about the celebration of Christmas in Jeremiah?
Absolutely, he does. Yeah.
And what's the primary symbol of the Christian celebration in the homes of Christians?
It's the Christmas tree.
Right. And what does God say about the Christmas tree?
He says, "Don't do that like the pagans do, and decorate, cut trees out, bring them into your house, and decorate them with gold and silver and all that stuff." It's just, you know.
Don't
also,
do it.
Yeah. And we know what the symbol of it is, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just saying it's stupid. Yeah, he's saying, you know, this evergreen brought into the home that you think is representative of eternal life, and that the pagans I thought represented their god because they worshipped their gods in groves of trees. I'm telling you, don't do it.
Yeah. So you're of the mind that Yahweh doesn't return and embrace the Southern Baptist Association, correct?
I am of the mind that when Christians say, wait a minute, you know, I worshipped you on Christmas, they say, it wasn't me, man. It wasn't me. You know, you may have been worshiping Dionysus, but when you went and sang your Christmas carols, it had nothing to do with me. No. So you really ought to go to that that cleric that wanted to put Christ back in Christmas, and you may want to have a bone to pick with him because he sold you a bill of goods.
Absolutely. Well, we weren't taught that. I have to admit that there was no Christmas. We, you know, I knew the history, and I would tell that to my students sometimes, and I would say, you know, and they would just say, "Oh, don't ruin another holiday for me."
We don't want the truth to get in the way with our illusions, huh?
No,
we love our illusions.
That was not an uncommon reaction. The plate don't do that to Easter now. And I say, well, you know,
Easter is even worse than Christmas. Of course, Christmas is 9 months after the Mother Earth was impregnated by the rays of the sun on the Sunday nearest the vernal equinox. And of course, Christmas is 9 months later, the gestation period where the son of the sun is born. And it is completely inconsistent with God's testimony. And it is completely consistent with pagan religious lore. Yeah. But Easter is far worse than Christmas. I mean,
yeah, because
there isn't even a semblance of truth with Easter. Not that there is with Christmas, but, you know, the arrival of Yahusha, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, took place on shelters, on Sukkah, which is at least within, you know, on average year, 3 months of Christmas. And there is nothing, I mean, literally nothing that is consistent with Easter.
Well, even
with,
in the, Easter. Some of the witness writings even say that Yahusha was born 6 months after the birth of Yahochanan the Immerser, so that still puts you in the fall.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
you can't
get out of the truth there. So.
Yeah, you know, even the historical accounts have the timing of his birth linked to a father's service as a Levite in the temple, being Torah observant. And so it gives you the timing from that perspective. And Yahochanan declared that he tabernacled with us. Tabernacle is the translation of Sukkah, which is when he arrived. But you know, understand that Yahshua makes it very clear that God was not born. God does not have a birthday. It was a son was given to us, but it was the child that was born, and that child became a diminished manifestation of Yahweh through the set apart spirit.
Yeah. So,
but God was most certainly not born on that day.
No.
Nor did man kill God, and was God bodily resurrected on a day called Easter. It's named after Esther, the Mother Earth goddess and the mother of God, Queen of Heaven of the Babylonian religion.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you can look that up anywhere. That doesn't take any great shakes. I mean, I've got books.
No.
Long before I ran across you, I had books on all that stuff. So
You know, and the question really becomes, and this is important stuff, because it is undeniable that Christmas and Easter and Sunday worship are pagan, that they grew out of the Babylonian religion and they were practiced by the Greeks and the Romans. That Sunday worship, Christmas and Easter, are all pagan and Babylonian and have nothing to do with God. Since that is obvious, anybody can look it up. Mm-hmm. And there is no way to refute it. There isn't even an attempt to refute any of it. When you recognize that, and then you know that you have been lied to by your religious leaders, who want you to come in, dig deep, and make donations, and will have their churches all decorated for Christmas and for Easter. when you know that they have deliberately misled you because they know the truth,
mm-hmm.
why would you continue to trust such scumbags with your soul?
We just don't. Well, I guess from a Christian standpoint, if you relied on Paul, which I was going to talk about for a moment.
Yes.
Well, if you relied upon Paul, Paul said, you know, I could be anything to all people to convert them.
Yeah, so the truth doesn't matter.
So according to the, especially in the early days when it was just the Catholic Church, you know, they could be, they would adopt anything to get you into the family. So, you know.
Well, their family, which wasn't God's family.
Not God's family, but their family.
Yeah.
Their program.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it their family because while they claim to have fathers, they don't. There's no family nature of this. Yeah, the Pope is worshipped. His rules are obeyed.
Yeah.
It's a hierarchical structure, and most families I know don't have militaries, and they don't have hierarchical structures, which the Roman Catholic Church does. So
you can burn at the stake, you know, if you don't agree with them all the time.
They don't. Most parents don't make torture implements for their wayward children.
But God,
it is a sick world, man. It is really a sick world. When you travel through Europe and you go into the museums in all the little towns throughout Europe, every little town in Europe has a museum devoted to torture implements. And all of the torture implements, without exception, were created by the Roman Catholic Church, by Christianity, and put into practice by Christian priests. They were developed by Christian clerics and deployed by Christian clerics. And there's really no exception to it.
No.
It's just good grief.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Good grief.
Good grief, Charlie Brown.
Yeah, I know. It's when you really study Christianity and you start with the myth that there was no such thing as a Christian. There was a Christusian, but even then it was used as an epithet. It was to mock them. And that God never speaks of a religion of Christianity, never speaks of Christian. And then you get to their church and you realize there's not even a word in Greek, much less Hebrew, that is even within a million miles of church. God doesn't have such an institution.
No.
Oh, you know, good grief. Good grief. I know you want to talk about the similarities between Islam and the Christian New Testament. We'll do that as soon as we return. Christmas, Sunday worship, and Easter, as well as Christ and church and Christian. Kirk, I know the reason you called was to compare Pauline Christianity and the Christian New Testament, of which his books are half of, and Islam.
Oh, by the way, I did a little study. I took a King James, and there's about 50-50 pages of the apostles versus about 50% of the pages to Paul. So it's a 50-50. However, if you throw in Luke with Paul, and you have to throw in Luke with Paul, you know, you don't really need Luke or Paul. I mean, Luke or Acts is what I meant to say. In there, I mean, if we threw out Paul, then you wouldn't need Acts to know what's going on. I mean, I don't see much value in Acts, and I certainly don't see much value in Luke.
No. So, I think there's some value to the first six chapters of Acts.
Okay. Well,
but because that tells about the disciples immediately after the celebration of Pesach and Matzah were fulfilled, and up to the, and including the fulfillment of Shavua. I mean, you would have known exactly what happened on Shavua and when it happened, even without the account. But the account affirms that what we knew happened and knew would happen did happen on Shavua. So the first six chapters of Acts, okay.
Uh-huh. But,
but the rest of it's counterproductive.
Yeah, but even that is a 60-40 book. I mean, assuming that
it is.
Assuming it wasn't copy edited in most of the ones from the disciples.
Yes.
So in any case, you have this. But what struck me today when you were talking, you were talking about obviously the Quran, but Muhammad and the three mm-hmm. points that you're hitting. There was obviously he's perversion is fine, as good, as encouraged.
Yes.
Lying is good, of course. Women are nothing. Or lesser than, at least you could say.
A woman exists for the purpose of men to control, men to use. Women are there for men to use. They're a valuable asset. I mean, these girls were stripped naked, so women obviously are desirable from that point of view. They were stripped naked and they had a price tag around their neck, so you know they were to be used like you'd go off and use a tractor to till your farm. They're something to be purchased and to be used.
You can't produce jihadists if you don't have some women. So
yeah, that's also true. Yeah,
it's
Ask your wife what she thinks about the Islamic perception of a woman.
No.
No. I already know the answer to that one, huh?
Oh, yeah. And rightfully so.
I agree.
So then you do a quick little parallel in my brain. Goes, okay, now Paul was obviously not against slavery. He talks about it. He sends the slave back. He's obviously right. perverted, and is, of course, it's not his fault because the Torah made him perverted. But regardless, he approves of it. He tells women to be quiet, and I don't care, even as subtle as that may sound, when you cut off somebody's voice, they're not free.
Well, he's worse than that. He says that women are slaves to the Torah, and he says that men lord over women. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, he's... Yeah, he's
to their husbands, and everybody should obey their rulers, like Rome. Now...
Right.
So now...
Wrong, but yeah, you're correctly citing what Paul wrote. Uh-huh. It's just that what Paul wrote is wrong. Yes.
Yeah. So really... Just to prove to myself, if no one else, to put another nail in Paul's coffin and understand, this is exactly the same voice and is sold exactly the same way. I mean, this is Satan's voice.
Yeah,
because he becomes the last prophet, and therefore everything he said, you can throw away everything that came before him in the form of Muhammad. And Paul becomes the last apostle. And he contradicts everything, and now you have a New Testament, which is, so the whole thing is so obviously the same scheme from the same source. It's just...
Yeah. Actually, while their message is the same, the extent of the message varies. You know, Paul claimed that he was murderous, and that he tells his faithful to go off and kill, to bludgeon Jews, because he says those Jews, they're just evil. You got to go out and get rid of them. And yet he himself, after what he admitted that he was murderous initially, he didn't spend the rest of his life killing that we know of. Muhammad did. Paul spoke against women, but we have no indication that he raped women or that he sold women into slavery. Muhammad did. And so if you'll stay with us, Kirk, we'll talk about the difference. The message is the same, but there's a difference in degree between Christianity and Islam, and we'll consider why. So, Kirk, if you look at the difference in the Quran and the Hadith, Muhammad committed mass murder.
Right.
Paul admits that he is a mass murderer.
Yeah.
The Quran demonizes Jews, calls them monkeys, calls them pigs, says that God made their faces look like their asses, and tells Muslims to go off and kill them. And Paul was stunningly, I mean, almost verbatim as harsh on Jews as was Muhammad in the Quran. So about the same there. Muhammad engaged in pedophilia. I don't think Paul did.
No.
Muhammad engaged in rape. Paul demeaned women. Muhammad actually raped them.
Yeah.
Paul did speak of slavery favorably, and yet Muhammad was built his religion on the slave trade. Paul says you have to subject yourself and submit to all government, And the Quran's primary theme is to submit and to obey, which is very, very similar. They're identical. But in most places, Paul speaks words where Muhammad does those words.
Mm-hmm. But
and so, go ahead.
In all fairness, I mean, you know, Muhammad had the power at that point. He had his little army going around, and there was nobody to stop him. And Paul, thing I was saying, it's a softer sell, yes, but it's the same voice. And when it's given enough power, as it did in the Middle Ages and the Roman Empire, then it becomes the same animal. It's horrible.
Right. Yeah. When equipped with an army, as was Muhammad, it becomes identical, indistinguishable. Same voice, same message. Different significance and severity in terms of the initial application, but no difference in the later application. It's the same beast, that's for sure. Now, what I thought, you know, as I studied them, that if you look at people, not all people are the same. Some people, it's very easy to manipulate them physically, to promise them, they're turned on by the idea of sexual conquest. They're turned on by the idea of stealing. It excites them. There's lots of people that like killing. And as I said, as a girl that my son dated briefly, who lived right around Fort Hood, and she said that every one of the enlisted and officers that she dated said that they joined the military because they liked hunting and killing. That was their thing. And so there is a doctrine, there's a religion for those who find physical pleasure in physically depriving others of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so Islam appeals to the physical, to the physical depravity of man, to the flesh of man, where you conquer and abuse women, you rob people, you kill people, you enslave people. That's the depravity of Islam. And there is no good person in the history of the world that's ever been a Muslim. Now, Christianity is a much softer sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a counterfeit. It fools those who don't really think, but yet aren't totally and completely morally depraved. You've got to be morally depraved to be a Muslim. You don't have to be morally depraved to be a Christian.
No.
You just have to be unthinking.
Yeah, brain dead.
Brain dead. So it's a softer version of the same message that will appeal to those who don't think, as opposed to Islam that appeals to those who never get out of the way of the perversions of the flesh.
You know, when you write about the Malak and you describe them as being not creative, that mm-hmm. they can only counterfeit, they can only
right.
twist.
Right.
You have to at least give them credit. By gosh, they can twist it in so many different pieces, like the Vedanta face in India, where mm-hmm. they can capture man on whatever level it grabs him. You know,
right.
It's just.
Yeah, and there's a religion today that if Islam is for those who are mentally stupid and morally depraved, and Christianity is for the comatose. I mean, it's a religion created for those who are just unwilling or unable to think. Then there is another religion that appeals today to more men and women than any other religion. It's socialist secular humanism. The religion of man. And the religion of man, man makes the rules. So if you are gay, though, that's all right. If you're so homosexual is just fine because man's, you know, some men are homosexual. If you're a lesbian, that's okay because some women are lesbians. If you're transgender, that's okay. And under that basis, the abominators of the world become the most enlightened men to be worshipped and looked up to, men to be admired. And so you've got a religion that appeals to the arrogance of man. You know, and you look at that religion, what is their rallying cry now? It's around global warming and climate change, as if man had the capacity to change this planet, and then man has the capacity to save the planet.
Yeah. I mean, we can pollute ourselves in an area and make it unlivable, but we're not going to destroy the Earth through the things that they're
doing. No. The solar system on which the Earth exists is a system so massively beyond human scope and human influence that the worst of that we can do, while bad, is just doesn't measure up compared to the other influences that gravity and solar radiation and the kind of mega systems that are at play within our solar system. So what global warming does, and environmentalism does, is it gives the appearance that man can and should save the planet, that, you know, man is the superior individual. That's a religion for the arrogant.
Yeah.
You know, but you look at environmentalism and liberalism, it really is very similar, though, to the old Babylonian Mother Earth religions. You know, it worships the creation and studies the creation as opposed to paying attention to the creator. So it really has a lot in common with those religions.
I mean, the Druids and they go and worship the trees and the forest and so forth and the animate.
Right.
And then you have the other big religion in India, where you're going to meditate. Uh-huh. So you're a total escapist. I want to be one with nothing. One with nothingness,
yes.
And that's the ultimate thing you get out of it, is if you make the eighth plateau, then you're nothing.
You know, when you're dealing with Buddhism, you are trying to achieve nothingness, and you know they will get exactly what they're looking for, which is nothingness upon their death. I think Hinduism exists solely for political economic reasons. I think the Hindu religion was created and is still promoted for social economic reasons, that its caste system and its ability to control people, and religion is the best control mechanism that man has ever conceived. That's why Rome was so insistent on the Roman religion being carried wherever their troops went. That caste system and the elevation and power and dignity of the clerics and the politicians endorsed by those clerics, it's a marvelous system to have the elite control and keep down the masses.
Well, Confucius was not far removed from that either. I mean, he wasn't what we would call religious, but he came up with a plan to, you know, this is the way society should work, you know, follow these dictates.
Right.
You know, so it's just man controlling man constantly.
Yeah, and if you look at like the Harvard mentality, where Sun Tzu is the highest tome in their library, the most esteemed tome in their library, it's man controlling other men, and the ways that the techniques that you deploy to influence and control others. And then you look at the real founding father of modern socialism. He didn't write it for this purpose, but be Machiavelli and his Prince, where he was writing to princes in Italy as to how to use the Roman Catholic papacy to control people. And you know, the book is about the idea that as an economically advantaged individual in the royalty of Italy, that you had the right to the papacy, and if you're going to use it, while it would be lovely to be loved, there isn't enough power in love. that the only form of power that actually works is brutality, is to terrorize people, is to have them submit and obey you out of absolute fear. And that he says that because control is so important to achieving anything, that the ends justify the means, and therefore the means ought to be terror, fear. Be the most savage leader of all time, and you will have the largest following. That was Machiavelli, and look what communist and socialist regimes have done. I mean, they're following the ends justify the means, and you have Mao, you have Stalin, you have Adolf Hitler.
Well, it worked for the British Empire, too. I mean, they didn't go to India. They weren't nice guys in India, and they certainly weren't nice to the Aborigines in Australia or the indigenous people in America. So,
Look what they did in China and promoting opium so that they could sell a drug that dumbed down the victims. It reminds me really of Sparta and the way the Spartans dealt with the surrounding communities and the treatment of those people. And, you know, the British Empire and its behavior in China, which, by the way, America replicated and participated in for a significant period of time. We were...
Fill the void.
We were co-conspirators in the abuse of China that was begun by the British. It's a disgusting story, worse even than what they did in India. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having kind of a broad view here with Kirk of the dominant religions in the world and how there really is a variation of doctrine for everyone. And if you look at the most deadly today, it would be socialism, whether it's being practiced by fascists or communists. But socialism, and where individuals are empowered, individuals actually take on godlike status, is the most deadly. It plays into the ego of man. It is the religion that is behind political correctness. It's the religion that's most dominant in America. It's the religion of academia, politics in America. It's amazing that in a country that wasn't supposed to have the establishment of a religion, we actually have socialist secular humanism as a national religion in America.
Well, look what happened to that. It's a simple little story, but a PGA guy, you know, they struck him. Not only
right.
Did they fire him because he called a guy a sissy.
He said, you're crying like a little girl.
Crying like a little girl. And he said, they struck his portrait off of the book and all of his accomplishments out of their thing. How sick is that?
Petty. Petty.
Yeah.
For a reference that 10 years ago, no one would have even thought twice about, but we've become so politically correct that you can't say cry like a little girl. It's as if you can't differentiate in any way in political correctness men and women unless it is to provide a unfair status to women. You can have a woman's golf team that men can't play on, but you can't have a men's golf team that women can't play on. And so you can give, if you're raising billions of dollars through football, and you provide scholarships to those athletes, you have to have a equal number of athletes playing broom hockey on the women's side. But beyond that, beyond that unfairness and in dealing with women as inferior, because that's what that says, that means that you're not able to compete with men, therefore you are inferior, therefore we have to create scholarships that only you can compete against fellow women because you can't compete against men. That's what that's saying. But then if you make a reference to women being emotionally more emotional and smaller, little girl, crying like a little girl, you can't say that. But yet you can offer all the benefits based upon that, but you can't say it. I mean, what a weird, weird, weird religion.
Sorry.
First of all, I like the fact that women are more emotional than men.
Yeah.
I like the fact that men are typically more analytical than women. That doesn't mean that all men are more analytical than women. It doesn't mean that all men are less emotional than women. It's not what that means. But on average, women are more emotional. Thank goodness. I mean, how would we have survived as children if women were not more nurturing and more emotional than men? And yes, and you know, how would society have functioned if men were not more analytical? It was a good plan. You know, it's interesting that I went in to have LASIK a couple of years ago, and I asked the doctor to do for me what I knew that doctor had done for some people that extended members of my family, women. And that is they cut one eye to be farsighted, the other eye to be nearsighted, and your brain then processes the difference. And it, if you're reading something close, it uses the close eye, and if it's something distant, it uses the farsighted eye. Mm-hmm. And that's what I asked for. He just laughed, and he says, what I'm going to tell you now is not going to work in politically correct circles, but what I'm going to tell you is correct. Men and women are different. I can do that for all of my female patients. I can't do it for any of my men. Not a single man can, will that work? And he says, the reason is, he says, again, this is not politically correct, but it is correct. Women's minds and men's minds function differently. Women are designed to multitask, and men are designed to be resolutely focused. And he says it just how we grew up. You know, a guy had to protect the house from the bad guys. And if you weren't focused on them, the bad guys would prevail. The guy had to go out and bring home the beastie so that you could have roast beastie for dinner. Mm-hmm. And you really had to pay attention to the beastie. But the women have to not only keep kept the home, but also raise the children. Women are designed to multitask. Men are designed to focus. You can't. Women and men can't have the same form of LASIK. No. We're different. Viva la difference.